Welcome to the Neuromyelitis Optica Spectrum Disorder edition of Rare Disease Advisor's Rare Care Podcast, offering unique perspectives from researchers, clinicians, and influencers from the NMOSD community.
Hello, this is Larry Luxner, Special Correspondent for Rare Disease Advisor. We're talking today with Sumaira Ahmed, Founder and Executive Director of the Sumaira Foundation, a global nonprofit organization dedicated to raising awareness of neuromyelitis optical spectrum disorder, otherwise known as NMOSD. Sumaira, who's speaking to us today from Boston, launched the organization in 2014, 2 months after she was diagnosed with the disease. PBS television recently featured Sumaira, as well as her foundation, as one of three patients with NMOSD. Thank you for being with us today.
Oh, it's my absolute pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Okay, let's start by having you talk about your disease and your life journey and how this all began.
Sure. So we need to rewind about almost eight and a half years ago. So I was 24 years old, living and working in Boston, otherwise very healthy. In fact, I was working in ophthalmology, which you'll learn later helped me. And that's when I experienced my first episode. And my first episode was basically severe vision loss in my right eye very suddenly. And so I went to the local emergency room here at Mass General Hospital. And we did some imaging, and that's when they determined that there was inflammation in the optic nerves in my brain. So that's what was causing the vision loss. I was admitted into adult neurology, where I received 3 days of IV steroids. And when I was discharged, I was told that it was an idiopathic case of optic neuritis, that my vision would likely return within 3 months to a year. And at that point, I had a 16% chance of developing multiple sclerosis. 2 weeks after that, I turned 25. I celebrated my 25th birthday, really just trying to move on with my life. And 2 weeks after that is when I experienced my second episode, which was far worse than the first. And that's when I was admitted once again, had a ton of labs drawn, imaging, lumbar puncture, et cetera, et cetera. And that's when it was determined that I had neuromyelitis optica. And it was the first time I had ever heard of it.
What happened during the second episode? You said it was far worse than the first. Can you describe it?
My vision didn't get any better from the first attack. In fact, it got worse. And it was originally only a visual field deficit, but during the second episode, my acuity had been affected too. So I went from 20/20 in both eyes to a period of 3-4 days. I regressed to 2600 in my right eye and 21/20 in my left eye. And then I was also experiencing, a severe nausea, pain in the back of my neck. And I think what scared me the most was this burning and tingling sensation in my hands and my feet. And so that's kind of, when I realized this was more than just what we thought it was.
And you at that point had absolutely no idea what hit you.
No, not at all. I mean, naturally, I was very scared and I was nervous, but I knew that I was in very good hands at with the neurology team at Mass General Hospital. And so I was just looking to them for answers and advice and, a prognosis. But I will say that the first time when I was told I had NMO, I remember that moment very, very vividly. It was definitely a milestone in my journey, and just the sound of it shocked me and it frightened me.
Did you at that point, since you had worked in ophthalmology, had you ever heard of the disease?
Never. And in fact, I had worked with a number of different specialists in ophthalmology. At that point, I'd been working at the clinic for about 4.5 years. And all the specialists who I had worked with, they were even shocked that I had this. And they said it was something that they rarely saw in real life and more so remember from medical school when they were studying.
Now, what's interesting is that, as I mentioned to you earlier, we have interviewed Dr. Michael Levy from Mass General, who is, of course, a top expert in NMOSD. And he told us that a disproportionately high proportion of patients with the disease are African American or anybody of African Caribbean origin. Nobody seems to know why that is. Is this also true of people of Asian heritage?
This is what I'm told, yes. I think the data shows that there is definitely a higher prevalence it, you know, so the more eastward you go, so definitely in the Asian countries. And I was born and raised in New Jersey, so American by nationality, but my parents are from Bangladesh, which is in Southeast Asia. So, you know, I'm sure that there are a lot of patients there. And sadly, I think there are many patients there who are either undiagnosed or misdiagnosed.
We understand that initially, at least, up to 95% of NMOSD patients were misdiagnosed with multiple sclerosis and were given MS therapies that in fact made the disease worse instead of better.
Yes, very unfortunate and a consequence of not enough awareness and knowledge around this rare disease. But I will say in my 8 years of advocacy work in this space, probably every other day I come across a story from everywhere in the world, really, about someone being misdiagnosed with MS and how those therapies actually made the disease far worse. It's very sad, and it's reinforced is why the work that we're doing is so important, so that we can prevent any more misdiagnoses from happening.
And in fact, you were one of the few who was not misdiagnosed with MS. How do you explain that?
That's true. Well, I think, as I said earlier, you know, I was very lucky to be a patient at Mass General Hospital. This is where there are a number of specialists, Michael Levy included. And, you know, it was clear that they had seen this before. They had seen some variation of this. So, you know, I think living in Boston, working in the healthcare system, and of course being a patient of this incredible system where there are so much specialists and there's so much research going on in this space, I think that's what saved me, and that's what helped my early detection. Unfortunately, that is not the case for most patients around the world, including in the U.S.
Right. Well, we also, of course, wanted to speak to you because of your foundations being featured in a PBS Medical Stories episode, which just for our listeners started airing on PBS this June and will continue to be available on PBS throughout the entire year. It can be seen across the United States. And what's interesting is, of course, you were one of several patients with the disease to be featured. What do you consider the importance of being featured on this program, and how did they happen to come to you to tell your story?
Yeah, it happened in a very roundabout way through one person, and that person told the other person, and then it finally came to me. And when it did, you know, it was a no-brainer. I said to myself and our team that we're going to do this, you know, because visibility and raising awareness is important. And PBS is an incredible platform that reaches millions of households around the United States. And, you know, of course, it's also being streamed online. So no brainer. I knew I wanted to do it. But admittedly, I was a little bit nervous. You know, this was my first time coming out, so to speak, with my story on such a large platform.
Right.
And so I did allow myself, as difficult as it was, to be vulnerable when we were filming and really share those raw emotions and feelings that are accompanied by going through and living with a rare disease. So,
well, this particular disease is characterized by basically a patient's immune system attacking itself, attacking cells in the central nervous system, and basically destroying one's own immune system. And yet the FDA has now approved 3 therapies to treat NMOSD so that it doesn't necessarily take over your life, that you can actually control it. What therapies are you on, if you don't mind me asking, and what advice might you have for other patients going through the same journey?
Sure. So I have been on an off-label therapy since my last relapse, which was in November 2018. So this November, I'll be celebrating 4 years in remission, which is awesome. Mm-hmm. But at that time, the 3 FDA-approved therapies weren't available. So the first one was available in 2019, and then the 2 others were available in, when was that? In 2020, so really during the pandemic. As much as it's been nice to be in remission, of course, that's what everyone kind of hopes for. Remission doesn't necessarily mean that you are without issues. You know, it just, for me, I define it as it's kept me out of the hospital as an inpatient. But I'm really looking forward to actually switching my therapy to one of these on-label therapies that are FDA approved for NMO because, you know, these are therapies that were designed for patients just like me. And with this disease in mind and with these symptoms and all of the above. So I am a huge advocate for patients getting on these therapies if they are able because of what I just said. I mean, we went from having zero options to now three options, and having options as a rare disease patient is a gift that there's no value that you can, or price you can add to that.
Now, as I understand, as with the case in MS, a disproportionate number of patients of NMOSD are women. Any reason for that? Do you make sense of it?
Well, unfortunately, it feels like the worst things always happen to women. So it's true and it's sad. But, I like to think of women as superheroes, and we have superpowers. And, for the most part, we're fighters. So, these are the cards that we're dealt with. And yeah. I just pray and hope that patients continue to get smarter and stronger and have the ability to overcome, whether it's NMO or something else.
One thing I wanted to ask you is about your own organization and the work you do. I understand that you have just launched your website, content available in 10 languages. You've expanded to Canada and to Europe. You plan to grow further internationally. Just talk for a brief minute or so about what your foundation actually does.
Sure. So I launched this foundation 2 months after I was diagnosed myself. So 8 years ago, when I was, recovering from my second episode. And basically, I had scoured the internet looking for ways to connect with other patients and find out, who's raising awareness for this? Is there a celebrity spokesperson? Like, how do I get involved? Because I was really, trying to do whatever and find ways to save my own life. Yes. But in 2014, the landscape of NMO and patient advocacy for NMO was very different. There were organizations that existed who were more focused on research, but I didn't feel that anyone was really owning the space of raising global awareness and advocating for the patients and really building a support system for patients and their caregivers. And that's when it kind of dawned on me that, maybe I need to do something, because I had plenty of experience working in healthcare at that point, working in the entertainment industry prior to my life with NMO. I studied PR in college, and, I'm just not shy. But more importantly, I had this drive to do something, because something was better than nothing. And I selfishly did not want to prematurely die from something because nobody knew about it. So for me, it was a very clear, answer. I said, let me just try and see what happens. And if I can even help one other patient, then everything I'm doing is worth it.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
Thank you.
That's a story.
I was going to say, in summary, though, our foundation is focused on, as I said, raising global awareness of NMOSD and WOGAD. We're very passionate about building communities of support for patients and their caregivers. We have funded hundreds of thousands of dollars in research, and we advocate for patients as well on a global scale now too. So the foundation has evolved and grown quite a bit. It's really beautiful to be a part of, to witness and observe. So a really wonderful time for us, actually.
And with the approval of three therapies, it seems that it's also a good time for prospects of, if not a cure, at least a way to control the disease.
I think that these therapies obviously are life-changing, and it's quality of life-changing, but more so I think it's symbolic of our future with this disease. That, as you just said, we have three with more coming in the pipeline, and I'm hopeful that this is just the beginning. And, just to reinforce that having options is a priceless gift. This is a community that had no options before. And the options that were available to them were, some would say experimental or off-label for other indications. So I'm really excited for our community, both NMO and MOGAD, because we have, so much support now from the pharmaceutical industry and researchers to make our lives better with these life-changing therapies.
Wonderful. On that note, I'd like to conclude. Thank you so much for talking with us today. It's very much appreciated. This is Larry Luxner for Rare Disease Advice.
Be sure to follow the latest news, perspectives, and clinical resources on rare diseases at rarediseaseadvisor.com. Thank you for listening.